Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James Ballard.
I wrote Code Switch.
And also today, we have a brand new recurring guest. I'm pleased to announce that we have senior Starfinder designer, I got that title right, I think, John Compton. John, did I get your title right?
Senior Starfinder developer, but
oh, yeah, developer.
A lot of overlap in the roles.
That's fair. Well, welcome aboard again for the second time consecutively, John.
I mean, we have a lot of cool stuff coming up, so like,
I mean, it makes sense. I feel like it was just yesterday when you announced that you were like going to revolutionize Starfinder with Tech Revolution, and when you would be sending magic beyond the galaxy with galactic magic, and now you're here to evolve Starfinder into something completely different. Am I right?
That's the idea, yeah. And this is for a book we haven't even announced yet. So, this is good. So, like, we launched a playtest for a new class about 3-4 weeks ago now, called the Evolutionist, and it's a class about basically transforming into something else entirely. What that something else is basically yours to shape. So, from the very beginning, you decide whether you are evolving into some sort of biological chimera, or you are becoming like a techno lich, or if you are transforming into raw magic itself, like the Evolutionist is designed to be able to accommodate that sort of vision.
It sounds like a very broad class that I'm really excited to hear more about. And if for those of you following along on Twitch, we are doing this show live in front of a robust audience. And James has gone ahead and put the link to the playtest document in our Twitch channel. So anybody who's listening, it can happily join along. And as many of you know, this is a playtest, which means please, Paizo would like you to go out and play this. Please just go take the class, build characters, run adventures, do content. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. We have the playtest going for more than a month left. So we ended, I believe, on September 24th. You'll be able to find the link to our surveys as well with the playtest documentation.
I feel like this is one of the longest playtests y'all have ever done. Am I wrong?
I mean, for Starfinder, it's pretty close. Yeah. And that's just part of the production cycle. Like, when we create one of these books, oftentimes we get to the point where we're like, okay, we need to spend several weeks concepting it, and then there's an outline period, and then it's like, okay, off to the writers. But for a live playtest or a public playtest, we need to get things done even earlier than that. And so oftentimes we find ourselves in a position where it's like, okay, we got like 6 weeks, 8 weeks or so to playtest this stuff. But this was one where we really made a push to get the class written as early as possible so that we can get as much playtest time as possible. So we want the public to make the best of that, whether that is getting in multiple playtests or running a multi-session short campaign with the character, or doing higher level content once you've played some of the lower level stuff as well. Just show us a variety of stuff and ideally not only build the characters, but test them out.
Play them, break them, smash them into the super collider. It's so good.
I evolved into debris.
Do what I did to Justin, or not Justin, do what I did to Dustin and just chuck him into a black hole. Actually, that wasn't my fault. He fell in. It's his fault.
dear Paizo, Vanguard cannot survive a black hole. Rewrite.
Rewrite! I mean, if there's any class you would think that wouldn't survive a black hole, it would definitely be the one that like just embraces entropy. It's like, black hole, let me join you!
At long last, I thought this was a capstone. I'm doing it at level 3!
Yeah! Alright, so we have a couple people in chat who they want to know more about the lore behind this class, specifically like the backstory. How was the Evolutionist conceived and why? This question was posited by JRock9430. And I think that's a good place to start this discussion, because I know for me, like when I looked this class over for the first time, when I look at other classes, like when I saw like the precog, I was like, oh, this is Prince of Persia, this is dope. Or when I saw the nanosite, I was like, oh, this is that bad guy from Big Hero 6, that's dope. Or when I saw the biohacker, I was like, oh, this is Honey Melon from Big Hero 6. This is dope. And like, I looked at the
Evolutionist. I've never seen a trend here.
Yeah. And I looked at the Evolutionist. I was like, this is cool. I don't know what this is. Like, help me. Tell me, John, what's the inspiration?
Okay, so let's start with the out-of-setting inspirations first, or some of the parallels, and then we'll get into the setting itself. So the evolutionist can be a variety of things. This could be somebody who is able to transform on the fly. So this could be similar to like what Pathfinder First Edition had for the Shifter. It could be similar to like Beastie Boy, where it's somebody who can shape change to solve problems. Mm-hmm. Because it's Starfinder, you know, some of those problems are in fact combat problems, and you are going to grow a club tail to Ankylosaurus somebody through a wall. That's your business. But it is you changing your body to address issues. When it comes to in-setting inspirations, though, our game, and in fact just D20 games in general, are ones of supernatural transformation. Like going back to the DNA of like the Dragon Disciple prestige class, where you are slowly becoming the dragon you were always meant to be. This is something where, you know, you can look at the deity Oris, who is a deity of like evolution and biological transformation. You could say, cool, clearly the vital path for the evolutionist is tied to, or could be tied to Oris. And Oris saying like, I like you, have 15 wings. It's like, thank you. We have Urgothoa, who espouses undead transformation. Okay, well, we have the sepulchral path for that, where you are turning into some sort of undead being gradually. Iloratu, a god of magic. Cool, go with the, what was it, the Eldritch route. Or if you just want to be turning into some sort of cybernetic being, because honestly, we have a lot of technology going on. We have some cyberpunk themes as well. I'm sure Trione will welcome you, especially the Cassandra portion. So there are all these different divine inspirations and expectations and supernatural possibilities that already exist in the Starfinder universe. We just have not always had a way to express it as well as we could until evolutionists. We've certainly been able to do that some with the augmentations that have their four major categories that I just kind of covered. And those in turn steered the evolutionist design, because when we were saying, what can they turn into? What are we going to have as our not sorcerer bloodlines? We looked at augmentations like, oh, hang on, we already have an answer here. And that's kind of one of the design choices that we had to make, is like, do we go something like a sorcerer bloodline where it says, you are turning into a genie? Like, can I turn into an elemental? No, you're going to become a genie, like or dragon or hag or whatever. And or we could go much broader. And that's more of what we have, because it creates a bigger palette for you to play with as a player. Are you turning into something generally more biologically weird? Cool. This whole path applies to you. You're not just turning into a plant.
Yeah, and with Starfinder, you have so many more options as far as like what species you're from and like your environment, that you already get so much cross-pollination with what like you could be, as opposed to 1E and any type of those like augmentations or transformations, because you're so narrow, at least in early material.
Gosh, can you imagine how much it must like turning into a hag as your like evolutionary path? That's just basically aging with extra steps.
That's just getting extra bitter that kids keep kicking balls on your roof.
But you get to do it so quickly. Like you could be done with the whole thing by the end of an AP.
Oh my, it's like your president. You just age so rapidly.
I imagine at the end of your path, you just eat the children that are kicking the balls on your yard, right? Like that's the capstone, the level 20 capstone. All those children who mocked you, now you must devour them, and you shall.
I like how the level 10 ability that you unlock is called Get Off My Lawn, and level 20 is just, I said.
And then like level 15 is, all right, get over here, you kids. Oh, it's just, it's escalation, the class feature. I love it. So speaking about escalating class features, the evolution point system that this class features as its like core mechanic really is kind of like an escalating event. I like calling it event because it feels like you get a point and like, it kind of feels like Vanguard, but without a lot of the extra like complications, I guess is a good word for it. Because like Vanguard gives you points every turn, but like there's a billion things that I have to remember as a GM that also get points and I always forget them. So I was kind of glad that this was easier. Can you tell us a little bit about this evolution mechanic?
Yeah, so the core idea behind it is that as combat is happening, or as stressful situations are happening in general, defaults to combat, you are not just doing your long-term transformation where it's from here to Mothra in 20 levels, but also combat happens and now your body is like adrenaline rush. And adrenaline for you just happens to mean even more of what you were already doing. So your body goes into overload and you're getting these things called evolution points as you go. And they are both a fuel source and a temporary buff to what you can do. Mm. But there's also a little bit of your evolutionary path taking over as you do. So there's a bit of push-pull that we were aiming for, that I was aiming for in creating this, which is like, if you are at the very top of that evolution point pool, sure, you're really powerful. Sure, you have immensely powerful claws, but whatever it is that is inside of you is partly controlling you, and there are drawbacks to it. So it's a little bit more, a slightly more granular version of what the Solarian has, where mm-hmm. they have three states of unattuned, attuned, and fully attuned. Mm-hmm. This one has, okay, how many points do you have, really? And then you get several different things as you go. So although it has a little bit less of like, how am I going to spend all these evolution points than the Vanguard necessarily does for EP, it does have some more to keep track of as far as what my current state is and what that does for me. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly one of the things that we're playtesting, is like, how much is the right amount for that? And right now, like, you know, are the weaknesses and drawbacks fun? Because we're giving you a fair number of cool things to do, but we're also giving you a weakness that is growing as you gain EP.
It kind of reminds me of the second edition Oracle's Curse, where like the more focus points you spend, the more bad you get, but also the more good you get. Like, at least that to me was like the first, the very first thing that I saw that I was like, whoa.
Yeah, there are also echoes of like Shadowrun essence, where you are mm-hmm. becoming less human or less yourself as you gain more augmentations, or Vampire the Masquerade, where the more that you like dive into the fury, bite people's neck stuff, the more power you get, but the less control you have over yourself.
Are you telling me this is Corruption's the class?
It kind of is, at least on a short-term basis. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to have long-term curse effects going on, but you will have momentary bits of like, how much do I want to drink the power?
Well, gosh, now I need a Witch Warper spell that when you cast it on this class, they have to automatically take their penalties. Witch Warper. Anyway, we have a couple comments in chat. JRock4930 says, how much can we expect to see change from the initial evolutionist design as a result of feedback? I think this isn't so much of a question that's like, oh man, I want everything changed. I think that like video games have kind of taught a lot of gamers that sometimes big corporations will put on these like elaborate playtests that are kind of just marketing things. And at least as a longtime Paizo fan, I know that's not how you guys do stuff. But hey, maybe take a minute to talk about how great you guys are at playtesting.
I mean, yeah, so whenever we do one of these playtests, it is because we are trying something new out, or we're introducing a situation, a component that is going to be so important to the game that we want to make sure that we get it right. You mm-hmm. are going to have to live with the Vanguard or the Witch Warp or the Nanocyte in whatever state it comes out. So let's make sure it's as good as it can be and serves your needs as well as it can. And so when it comes to the evolutionist, depending upon what the playtesting feedback looks like, then, you know, maybe it gets some small cosmetic changes. Maybe it gets an overhaul to several of its major pieces. Remains to be seen. But one of the things that certainly ends up happening with some of our playtests is we will flex certain things to try out stuff that, you know, we might not want to just publish in a hardcover book right out and live with the consequences, but that we want to see in action. And like when it came to Paizo playtesting, this was probably nowhere more true than the Pathfinder Second Edition playtest modules. It was a book of seven different modules that like roughly two of them were, tell us if this is just fun. And the rest of them were, okay, we've put you in this terrible situation. See how well you do, or did this work or did that break, et cetera. It's really important for us to understand those things, and your involvement as playtesters is crucial to our getting a solid picture of that.
I still have nightmares from that one locked in the mansion with the endless waves.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
I still have those nightmares. They're there. They haven't left me yet.
Well, I'm glad the playtesting process is fun. Have fun.
That's okay. That's why we need gosh, what's a good place in Starfinder that starts with the letter D that we can bring Doom to?
Dymalko.
Yeah, Doom comes to Dimalco.
I mean, Doom already lives on Dimalco.
Doom visits from Dimalco.
There you go. The Doom came from Dimalco.
Oh, hey, that's a great name. You should write that down and use that again someday. That's really good.
Cargo holds open, opens up. They're like, oh, is this going to be like Alien? A Colossus comes out. Oh, no, too much. Did they at least send mechs as well?
Nope. No mechs. Only kaiju. That's all we get. Oh, another suggestion was Doom comes from the diaspora. That's also not bad. Okay. I could buy both of Doom coming from both of those places. Honestly.
Man, and we have Digox as well. Like none of our happy places, like all of our places that start with D are unhappy.
Gosh, you're gonna have to ask the editors who hates the letter D.
Or our authors, yeah.
All right. So we've talked a little bit about the core mechanics of the evolutionist, and I think that one of the things that people like talking about when they see it is just like all the wacky things that you can do with these types of classes. And I think one of the big things is the subclass mechanic. So for the precog, it was the oh my gosh, they were awesome. It was like I can't remember the name of the mechanic. It was like
the anchors.
Yeah, the anchors, like Doom Future. I love Doom Future. I think that's like got some of the greatest flavor roleplay. And I think that there's some really neat ones for the oh my gosh, my brain is totally not letting me say evolutionist. So there's a lot of cool ones for the evolutionists too. I know there's one that's like basically Fight Boy, the Marshall Path, but can you tell us a little bit more about all of them?
So two different little branches that you're making choices on. One of them is the evolutionary focus. That I think you're getting at, which is something that you do a little bit later on in your in the class. I think it's level 7, 14, and 20, something around there. Mm-hmm. Where basically you're making a choice between three different things. Either you're going more of an augmentation path, you're going more of a combat path, or you're going what is called the pack master, which is the I want to share what I do with my allies. Once again, playing very fast and loose with the concept of evolution.
Man, I wish somebody would evolve me to not be bored at meetings.
No, listen.
Suddenly you have focus.
When you hit level 7, you become the stressor that triggers evolution.
Basically, and which I'm sure makes you a real pain in the rear with your companions.
God, why is my hand now a tentacle?
Well, you were eating dinner. I figured it would help you grab food. Like, you were reaching for the salt shaker. I was helping. the augmentation one is, it plays into the idea of, hey, you want to transform your body. We have augmentations. Why not make it easier for you to do this? So this makes it so that augmentations are cheaper for you, and also that you can fit more of them into various body slots. So turn yourself into whatever, you know, monstrosity or divine angel of devastation you wish, using the existing mechanics we already have in the game, just with more of it. The combat one is basically an answer to, okay, what are my equivalent of like the Soldier's Onslaught or the Solarian Flurry sort of thing? The combat path basically says, okay, you get your extra attacks when you full attack, or you do so more accurately, sorts of powers. And the Pact Master says, do you want to spend some of your evolution points on adaptations to share those adaptation and boosts with your allies? Cool. You all evolve together. And that can be really fun, especially when, you know, you're in a terrible environment where, I don't know, it's raining lava because your GM hates you. And you can say, let's all get fire resistance. And your friends can look at you strangely and say, I don't know how you did that, but thank you. But yeah, it's a little bit more support based.
You're like, I subtly exposed all of you to skin-destroying fire, but at a molecular level, so it only burned away the topmost layer of your epidermis, and then increased the rate at which time flows around you, so your skin got used to it and evolved to be completely immune to fire. And you're just making this up now, aren't you?
And at that point, Keskadi the Mystic is like, that doesn't make any sense. Oh, for crying out loud, you cast magic.
it's funny though, because the minute you said that like the Broodmaster is like the one that's all about helping, now I'm picturing like a Skittermander evolutionist who just runs around triggering evolution to help nature. Nature's healing! I'm helping!
I think an adaptation that I don't think we have yet, but we should, is the just grow extra arms. And that way you could, in fact, be like, now everyone's a Skittermander.
And then the Skittermander just grows their tail into an arm, and now they have seven. That's, I'm the superior Mander.
I think at that point you start just tapping the X card because these visuals get real terrible.
Wait, hold on. I just noticed something. I don't know if this is intended or not, but Augmentation's the only one that has an EX next to it. Is that supposed to be for the entire evolutionary focus or just for that one? Because if Packmaster is an extraordinary ability, it's not even magic. You're just doing it.
Yeah. Mm. I assume that Packmaster would end up matching whatever our adaptations are, but...
Hey, it's a good thing.
Interesting.
It's a good thing this has got plenty of more development cycles and or editing cycles before it goes to the printer.
I just like beating up nerds in an anti-magic field. So anything that allows me to do that more efficiently, I'm a fan of.
you laugh. This has been our group's go-to strategy for at least four different adventures.
Okay. Works. It works. Nerds have terrible CMDs.
Nothing says good time with at the gaming table like having to recalculate every bit of your character because somebody slammed down anti-magic.
That's fair. That's very fair. That's why the augmentations in Starfinder are like not magical, right? Because it never matters. It's like, hey, we can make anti-magic field and we won't make you redo all your numbers. Starfinder. We won't make you do more math than is necessary.
Okay. Or at least we'll try.
We'll try. I mean, it's math. It's fine. So you mentioned that there are like two different like branch let's pick the things, and I called on the evolutionary focus. What did I not call on?
That would be the niche. So the niche is kind of the bloodline-ish ability. Which is the one like the tied into the augmentation type or family that you're going for. So sepulchral for undead, vital for biotech, mechanized for cybernetics, and the eldritch for magitech. So these are giving you several abilities at first level, an extra adaptation, which is something you can spend EP on at 10th level, and then it's giving you some permanent abilities and immunities at 20th level. And at first level, it's things like an extra couple of skill or class skills. It's giving you another adaptation that is unique to your path and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I especially love the sepulchral one, the 10th level incorporeal step. So then you can grief other Starfinders by being just incorporeal and so much stronger than them. Just get right back at Jed Nura.
Listen, it's not your fault. If there's a way to grief anybody with a class feature, James will find it.
You also get a fulcrum, which allows you to enhance it. So you have magical attacks. It works. It checks out.
Nura, I'm the ghost of all the Starfinders you got killed. Oh, no!
Wait, there's only one of you?
Yes! Vindicated.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I suppose you could be a therapy ghost and be like, I'm the ghost of the one Starfinder whose death was unjustified. Okay then.
It's you go like Scrooge, and then like all of a sudden you're like, well, I'm the ghost of like the Starfinder's future that you killed. Like, oh, it's only
so this is a really important time to bring up one of the first level abilities you get that you gain enhancements on later on, called flexible skill.
Okay.
So you'll notice that you have a fairly limited set of class skills for the evolutionist, but that is in part because you have a thing that's called flexible skill, where at first level and several levels thereafter, I think it's 7 and 14 or so, 7 and 15, you get to add more class skills to your list, as well as gain more skill points per level. And so if you want to become the evolutionist of Starfinder past, present and future, then you could totally choose bluff and disguise as your skills and transform yourself to look completely like a vampire or whatever and haunt the heck out of people. And then, yes, at level 10, when people start chasing you with stakes and torches and whatnot, then you turn into a trail ghost and flip through the wall and escape.
Man, it sounds like there's an evolutionist for James and me in this class. That's pretty great. Now, do you anticipate there being more content, or is this like the absolute maximum evolutionist that we're going to get in whatever mystery product this comes out in? Because we have no idea. I don't know anything beyond galactic magic. We're all confused except for John. John knows all the secrets.
I know at least some of them. There are more abilities that I sent over when I turned in the class that are not currently in the playtest. And, you know, that's partly because we want to be testing core features and make sure that those work and get all that ready before we just overwhelm folks with the sheer volume of awesomeness that will be featured in the book that this is coming out in. So I would expect there to be some more content beyond what you're seeing. It'll largely depend on, you know, how things fall on a page. This is a process called copy fitting that, you know, you've probably mentioned on the show before, or has been mentioned on the show before.
We have. Yeah. Leo, get it all to fit on the page. Leo's a great guy. So tell me, obviously, like when you sit down and design a class, you can't help but sit and pick your favorites and go, oh, I can't wait to play this character when I do it. Thurston will cry when I bring this character to his next gaming table. So what is that for you? What evolutionists are you most excited about right now?
Gosh,
tell me what will make Hillman suffer.
Oh, I mean, you don't even need to have special class features for that. All you need to do is join in the escalation of griefing each other, and you will make him cry. And then he'll turn around and do it twice as hard back to you.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, as an aside, Thirsty's in my gaming relationship is largely one where usually I end up running a game for him, and he just griefs me. And like, the way I run trivia at PaizoCon is... people are there to half the reason is there to make joke answers and try to make me cry. And my role is to be the straight man up front who is just like, somebody seems to have like suggested this pun using Drendel Drang's name. That is not the correct answer. And everybody laughs. So as far as the character that I think would be fun to play, though, I like playing weird and unexpected stuff. So partly I'm most intrigued by the Eldritch niche, where you were turning into some magical creature or just magic itself, because it's off the beaten path. Like turning into some sort of biological chimera is more meeting expectations of the trope. Turning into a zombie over time is kind of meeting the trope. Turning into pure energy and like usurping people's magic, that's weird. That's less common to me. So immediately I go there.
That's fair. I'm imagining a table where Thurston Hillman has ready, 5 Obaziah soldiers, 1 Obaziah evolutionist who is the evolved evolution of the Obaziah soldier, right? Right, you could do that with the combatant because it gets a lot of those soldier abilities.
I mean, yeah, you can absolutely do that. And on top of that, you could be, so there's another feature to the evolutionist called, Adaptive Strike, name changed a couple times in development. Adaptive Strike, which allows you to reshape parts of your body into weapons that you can use. So this can be to do physical attacks. It can be as straightforward as like, I turn my hand into a claw or a spike or a hammer. Cool. I grow a tail that is covered in spikes or whatever. It can be like, I have created out of my forearm a flamethrower, and I am blasting people with bursts of flame or jets of cold, or I vomit acid at people. Your call. It's made to be very flexible. But I could see for this Obaziah table, basically, I turn my hand into a doshko. I use my other hand to wield my first hand because tradition. The gem's just like, you don't need to do that. It's like, not the point. The other way that you control somebody within all Obaziah table is to have 5 classic Obaziahs and 1 Obolutionist. And at random, the players will switch who has the Obaziah pregens without telling the GM. And it'll just be like, how did you learn to breathe fire? I've always learned how to breathe fire. I'm becoming the best Obaziah there is. Yeah, I could totally do that. That's a game that I would run.
That sounds incredible. Turning over to the chat, let's see what some other people say. We have a couple people begging for an ooze morph. That's not really what we're going to talk about here. Then we have...
I will say, though, that that is one of the things that you can do with almost any of these paths. If you want to turn into a bio ooze or a magic ooze or a necro ooze, that's your prerogative.
Oh my gosh, so you're saying that I could just be a glob of necromantic energy, my body dissolves into the purest slurry of necromancy?
Yeah, I mean, you can absolutely do that. Or if you wait for about a month, you could totally do that with the nanocyte as well, which has the discorporation faculty that is all about turning into a glob of nanite gel. So
wow, Starfinder is truly in it, the best game there is on the market. What other game would let me be just a blob?
This is a game of wish fulfillment. Can I just not have bones?
Like art imitates life at last. All right. No. Then we have there's a lot of people who are talking about like the cash benefit of going augmentative focus, which is a pretty fun conversation. Dustin says that I know more about turning into a chimera than anybody else, which okay, Dustin. And then
I'm learning more about No Direction here.
It's fine. Dustin requests that we write the class in a way that if you read all the sentences backwards, it is a totally different class. You could just tell him no, that's fine.
I need to tell him no more definitively, namely the editors will find you and they will ask why I have condemned them to this. I will just point to you.
Gosh, that'd be terrible. I can't even imagine. Can you imagine having to read backwards? I can barely read forwards. let's see. And then we have someone mentioned a reverse evolution where you start with max and go backwards. I mean, that sounds cool. That's not really a question, but I like it.
I think that's pulling upon a comment I've seen from our message boards. Okay. Where it instead of starting at zero evolution points to start a combat and building up, it's one where you're either starting the encounter or you're starting the day with your full evolution points, and you're burning those and gradually recharging them. So less build up spend and more start high and sort of like a mana pool sort of thing.
That's interesting. Ooh. I mean, that'd be different from Vanguard. I don't know how good it would be. You could try it. Congratulations, you're the designer.
Yeah. I do have a bit of a question about like how wealth has been assigned in Starfinder, because the last couple classes we've seen at least, or like playtests of or release, a lot of them are capable of making their own gear, like either weapons or armor, and that's a significant amount of your money in Starfinder. Have you like noticed that Starfinder itself has been more cash strapped than what it was initially entailed, or is this just a consequence of wanting to design cool stuff?
I think that's largely a matter of the material that we're creating, And it's also partly a matter of the sorts of classes that I keep on wanting to create. Like, because Nanocyte was also me, and like both Nanocyte and Evolutionist are ones where these are concepts where they are do everything concepts, where if you see it in pop culture, it's I can turn into anything. Oh no, please, for design balance, no, you cannot turn into everything. I have nanites, they're like magic, they can solve any problem. No, yes, but no, they can't solve every problem. As you have, you know, the soldier sitting in a corner being very sad. But nonetheless, the nanocyte who can create gear is an important trope. And the evolutionist who can create their own natural weapons is an important trope and one we want to play to. Right. And so it's more a matter of the inspiration and less a matter of a grand design, you know, trajectory that we're taking.
Because also with the Vanguard as well, since they have their own attack, any weapon that you get is kind of like, and here's a bonus on how I do stuff. So it was interesting to see this kind of crop up again. And sometimes it is just a consequence of making the things you want to make, because those are fun tropes.
No, listen, it's all a preparation for like the Advanced Homeowner's Guide, which is all about using your credits to buy property. I'm positive. You know, 2052, Starfinder, Advanced Homeowner's Guide, it's coming.
The attack is incoming attack. I summon house. Who gave you a house? That is at least a level 13 item right there.
To be fair, Tondro did that in an adventure path where there's now a spell where you just summon a spaceship and drop it on people for fireball damage. It's great. Have you not seen this?
No, I haven't. No,
it's called summon ship, and it's a full round action fireball damaging or explosive blast damaging spell that the Witch Warper and the Mystic get that summons a ghost ship and just drops it on people. It's the greatest thing in this game.
Okay, so this is a ghost ship that drops on somebody, then vaporizes, as opposed to you drop a starship of the Starfinder scale. Yeah. Because that's like, all right, I drop a size medium starship on the enemy. You know that takes a flip mat, right? Like, correct.
Yeah, no, it's just fireball damage and then it goes away. Yeah, it's good. Cool. It's really fun. I highly recommend it, to the point where I've told all of my players that If they get it, I will consider not trying to interrupt that spell, but it's a full action, a full round to cast, so it's really tempting, you know? Because you just sit there and go, spaceship, spaceship, and hope it comes down.
It really is a Final Fantasy summon at that point.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
Did Bahamut just destroy Earth again?
Right?
Why did it only do 500 damage?
it's like if Starfinder had those incarnate spells that are in second edition. It's exactly what it is. You just summon the space. It's great. Also speaking of ridiculous anime tactics, Param is very excited that he can now use the evolutionist to be reincarnated as a slime. And then we also have, are there any hints as to what class features might be altered or replaced with alternate class features? I don't know what that...
Like archetypes.
Probably in upcoming books.
Yeah, exactly, right, books. Like, it's fine. It's in the future. We don't have to worry about it. Are you, a precog? We can't win all that stuff.
Precog will have spellcasting abilities, surprise. the one thing that I will share, only because it has been such a long-running request as far as Galactic Magic goes, is we do have a bow focused class ability in there.
A bow?
Yeah.
I mean, I could give someone a bow and they'll shoot it and it'll be like a bow. Use a bow.
It's not just for people on a Fallout planet that have no access to other technology.
It's very important to make sure that John doesn't mean that I'm going to take one of those like profession dancer like battle ribbons and tie it, and that's my bow. Like, it's very important that we get that clarification.
Oh no! Curse you, homophones! Yeah. Nah, that's been one of those people who have been speculating more and more about Tech Revolution content. They're like, maybe they'll finally have a bow user. It's like, it's in Galactic Magic. It's fine. Here. That's it for me.
They can wait a little bit for Hawkeye. It's fine. I mean, that'll coincide with the release of the Marvel TV show Hawkeye, which is clearly the purpose, right?
Yes, that is entirely the deal. We cut.
Just say yes. Smile and say yes. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Forward thinking. I guess we're all caught up on people having thoughts and things. So why don't you tell us how the playtest is going so far? What do you think of it? I mean, you're at like the cusp of it, right? There's still over a month left to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at this point, I have been following along with some of the conversations that's been happening online. Currently, one of my colleagues is managing the playtest surveys. So I have not yet taken a close look at those. So I'm familiar with a couple of the like knee-jerk reactions that we got in the first day or two. I've periodically checked in to see how people are enjoying or seeking improvement in some of the aspects of the class. But at this point, it's a little early for me to say like, oh, we're probably going to change this or yes, let's reconsider that. Because one of the facts of the development process or our product production schedule is that, you know, we launched a playtest and we have several other products that we were in the midst of bringing to you as well. So we're just finally getting beyond the point where we shipped Galactic Magic recently and we finished development on the book that comes right after that. So I was like, ooh, this week has been a nice breath of fresh air. And it's like, okay, back into that playtest sort of business. So
nice. Has there been anything where you've been like, no, you fools, no, you don't understand it?
I think one of the abilities that has either drawn some fire or has been more contentious has been like the weakness that you develop as you gain evolution points. Mm-hmm. And that the idea that as you're charging up, you are in fact also taking penalties is not something we typically do a lot with Starfinder or to start any of our Paizo's products. Like not since really corruption in horror adventures from first edition Pathfinder have we really done something like this that I remember. And drawbacks come with some difficulties, like ensuring that they all feel equally debilitating or equally manageable. And there are certainly some of them that fans have identified as being, you know, tougher to adapt to than others. Mm. And that's certainly one of the challenges that I had when I was creating them. And yeah, we're going to have to tinker with them some and just make sure that we're hitting that right balance with what happens when you do gain a whole pileload of EP. One of the things that did not make a final cut, even in my turnover, was the idea that if you capped out on your evolution points, then you could eventually, you could even like over acquire evolution points. And first edition medium had that ability where if you hit 5 influence, the GM was just like, give me your character sheet, give me your character sheet. You can come back tomorrow. It wasn't going to be quite that bad, but like that idea of just like, you know, the evolutions inside of you just like, no, I'm in charge now. You wanted a monster, now I get to reign. But that was, you know, making that work was just going to be too much. And frankly, the return on investment was probably not going to be a fun thing.
That's fair.
So, yeah, definitely one of the more challenging things that I have created. So, like, there's some of the feedback that I've seen where I'm just like, I hear you there. You know? But I'm excited about the various improvements that we're going to apply to it. And I'm also excited to hear like where things are working. And one of the things where I've seen the most positive feedback has been just the weird oddball flavor and potential that the class has, where it really is one of those, you mean I can turn into a dragon or turn into an ooze or turn into an X? And the answer is largely, yeah, sure can.
Be the best you that you can imagine.
So I can turn into a spaceship? It's like, sure. You know what? And then I can have my friends summon me onto my other friends. Like, oh, okay, less yes, but sure.
No, you say yes, but you have to kill yourself because the spell specifies a ghost spaceship.
And then I turn from the mechanized niche into the sepulchral niche, and now I get to be a ghost ship.
Amazing.
Oh, no, start as an SRO. Take the sepulchral path and be like, I've never understood what death is like, but I've decided to try and become a ghoul so I can understand the mortal process. And in the end, all you do is turn into a ghost ship.
Oh, gosh, you could go like Borai and be like, I'm trying to reclaim my living potential and evolve past my death back into life.
Oh, yeah, be a Borai with the vital niche, and your goal is that somebody tried to cast Raise Dead on me. It didn't work as intended. And now every moment of my waking existence, because it is existent, don't tell me it's a life, is trying to get back to first level.
That's so good. In chat,
Rossman, and their weakness is that you have, because the sepulchral weakness is like, mm-hmm. you might end up spending your next round mutilating the dead, and they're like, why are you doing this? Why am I doing this? You made me like this.
You made me like this. That's good. Rossman in chat says, what are some inspirations for the evolutionists? I'm a huge fan of the Zerg from StarCraft, and that's what evolutionist looks like to me. You found the thing that I couldn't figure out how this connected to a sci-fi medium, Rossman. Thank you. Yeah, this is the Zerg class.
Totally Kerrigan.
It's Kerrigan, yeah. Okay. All right. You know, there we go. Now I can say, oh, the precog is the dope Prince of Persia class, the biohacker is the dope Honey Melon class, the evolution is the dope Kerrigan class. There we go. We got it. We've got our outside of Starfinder icon.
Complete with being able to grow your natural weapons, complete with like I would take the vital evolution and just start getting all those weird chimeric powers. Slap augmentations on there.
And don't forget the most important part, the god combo.
I mean, that's free. Like, you don't need to play an evolutionist for that.
Off in the distance, the squad of Obaziahs holding up the banner of the one true evolved Obaziah.
I mean, there's that, or just like, you know, okay, so I sat down to play with all these characters, and the envoy's like, I am a living god. It's like, how do you manifest that? It's like, I give you a +1 to hit.
But it's the only way to get the morale bonus to hit. I am your god now. That happens so often in our James and my gosh, what was the name of that game with all the evil and the corruption?
Oh, Way of the Wicked.
No, not that one. The one in Starfinder.
Oh, Signal Screams.
That was it. Signal Screams. Yeah, that was really good. I was their god. Every time they crit, I shouted, and they got better at critting.
Yeah, it worked good. Good stuff. I do have a question about in the space of the evolutionist. How is there any like considerations in writing it to make it more evolutionist and fun and not eugenicsy, and like there's a perfect order to things?
Yeah, I mean, so I kind of mentioned earlier on that like already the evolutionist is playing real fast and loose with the evolution concept. Like, this is not something where you happen to survive this AP, your children will be better suited to survive the next AP. It is, you know, not that sort of thing. It's very much just shape changing and whatnot. And whatever the nature of your particular transformation is, there's there is no presumption about the why of why you're changing. It's not necessarily I'm becoming the ultimate form of life. If you want to play that and that is something your group is comfortable with, fine and dandy. But it's really just a class of I want to get from point A to point B and look weird while doing it. So there will, I'm thinking about the book that comes out soon. There will, so we already have a bit of a preamble here with the evolutionist class. There's still a little bit of space in there. So assuming that this is how it ends up looking in layout, then we'll likely take a look and make sure that this is not something where there's eugenics flavor to it. Especially also, I'll add, because this is barely a class about changing others. This is about your own personal journey. That Packmaster focus, you know, is the exception to it, but no, this is a you thing.
And I think it's definitely worth mentioning that this class does not change over time. It changes now. It's kind of like the magic-y science version of evolution, which I feel like probably makes Darwin really upset. Like, I imagine he would not like this. I think that he would not like it at all. But, you know, his loss is our gain.
This is very much the class that takes the same approach to evolution that most comic books take with radiation. It's like, I gained superpowers. No, your flesh melts off of your body and all your cells repel. What is wrong with you?
Oh, man, that makes me think of that time I got stuck in a microwave in Dead Sons.
The only power radiation gives you is the power to need to write your will or kill your cancer. It's like, what are the other? Don't do radiation, not even once.
But why not both? Like, you could, you know, kill cancer and then need to write your will because then you're next.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Starfinder, the game of shouting science more than science.
So, obviously you can't tell us the answer to this, but have you already decided who the iconic evolutionist will be? Because, I mean, I've heard from other people on this show that, like, Wayne Reynolds books early. So, you got that in mind already? You got the story hatching in the old brain cells?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We've been having a lot of fun with our iconics of late. So it'll be really exciting to unveil the precog. Mm-hmm. That character's a blast and has a neat visual to it. And the evolutionist, like, though, I can say two things about it. One of them is that this is a character about transformation. So, like, showing somebody who is partly transformed sure would show off what the iconic in the class is really about. The other is that for the past, oh heavens, I want to say like 18 months or so, we've had an in-house concept artist and art director, Kent Hamilton, who does a lot of, you know, design sketches and like the mechs that we recently showcased for Tech Revolution. A lot of those were based on his work or are outright his work. Or when it comes to the Lost Omens Moggy Expanse book, Kent did a lot of really cool concept art for that to help steer the direction of things. And Kent has been doing some really cool work behind the scenes on our evolutionist iconic. So every week or so, we'll get a sketch update and be like, kind of like this. And we're like, oh yeah, definitely kind of like that. And we already have a species chosen out and a little bit of a their evolutionary niche as well picked out. Exactly what their backstory is, though, that remains to be seen. There's a lot about their identity that we'll have to work out with whoever ends up creating their iconic backstory.
Nice. Very cool. Well, it's getting close to the end of our show. So is there anything that you would like to shout out to, or anything that you think that we should know about the evolutionists that we don't know yet?
Oh, heavens, things to know about the evolutionists. The main thing is really check out the class. You have until September 24th to get in your survey feedback. Can't stress strongly enough how important that is to let us know what your experience is with the class so we can make it fit your needs and evolve to your needs as best as possible.
Oh, that was good.
As I think Alex said earlier, like, the time for change is now. So get on that. But as far as also iconics go, we've been doing a whole bunch of Starfinder fiction of late. We had a cool one. A bunch of them are plugging Tech Revolution, showing off a bunch of that art. So there's one that landed today that is all about hacking, We had one last week that was about augmentation installation and how it can go horribly wrong. And I have two before that that are the Meet the Iconic and Iconic Encounter for our new Nanosite Iconic, the Ishtikri or Squid Person Verkia. So very happy with those two. So
yeah.
Although Tech Revolution has gotten delayed because of international shipping stuff, then you know we're gonna have to wait a little bit longer to see the interior of that, but you can still enjoy a whole bunch of cool Tech Revolution insights through that fiction.
Very cool. Very nice. Well, thanks so much for joining us for this episode of No Direction Beyond, John. And if you like what you heard today, please feel free to follow us at nodirectionpodcast.com. That's where all of our podcasts end up. We also have a Discord that James is going to put in our live stream right now. You can find the link to that on our website. There's a big Discord button. And we also have things that you can view on like, you know, YouTube, Twitch. Obviously, we record live in front of a robust audience on Twitch Wednesdays. Please come hang out with us. James and I really enjoy it. I also want to get into the habit of start doing a patron's private sanctum the way that No Direction Prime does. No Direction Prime kind of has like a thing where if you're on our Patreon, you can actually come in and hang out with us after the show and we'll keep the discussion going and we'll chat and it's like some No Direction topics. So lots of cool stuff from our network. We also have lots of great blogs and lots of other cool podcasts with lots of amazing people. Like we had one recently, Louise and Lauren just wrapped up a two-parter on the Mwangi Expanse for the new Age of Lost Omens book, which is pretty cool. And I've heard some rumors behind the scenes that a couple people are getting ready to do like big Tech Revolution themed blog content posts, which is really exciting. And I can't wait for those to land on the site. James, did I forget anything? Should we shout out to anything?
No, I think you covered everything. That was cool. Comprehensive. Good job.
Wow, way more than I'm usually. Like, usually I'm like, James, do this for me. All right. But thanks again for joining us on No Direction Beyond episode, I think this is 61. But whatever episode it is, we hope that we see you next time and that you go beyond with No Direction.